This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Bradnick come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal by myself today, but I have to tell you, it's my favorite time of year right now. Keeneland is in full swing. The Breeders' Cup is approaching. It's a great time to be here in Lexington, Kentucky. And thank you to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM 206. Don't forget to check out our website, horseracingradio.net, where you can listen to live streaming of tonight's episode, as well as replays from all of your favorite shows. And tonight, we have a very special guest on the subject of Breeders' Cup. The rider we have joining us tonight just might end up in the winner's circle more than once at Keeneland during the last weekend in October. I am very happy to introduce to you a jockey with 749 wins, almost $25 million in earnings, all the way from France, jockey Florent Giroux. Florent, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We know you're very, very busy, especially this time of year, and we really appreciate you taking the time to do this, Florent.
Thank you.
Thank you. So yeah, I mean, my gosh, you're busy. You're in Chicago right now, is that right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, just for a few days visiting the family and hopefully, you know, just a little bit, you know, of fresh air and make sure, you know, I charge, you know, my batteries and ready for a great week of racing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And do you still live in Chicago then?
No, not really. No, just at my house. My wife and kids are still there for the month of October. Then we're moving all together to New Orleans.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic! And so that has to be tough to be separated from your family currently, yeah?
Yes, it is, but it's just like a short period of time. It's only 4 months, so it's not too bad.
Of course, of course. And Florent, let's go back to the beginning as we usually do with this show. And you hail all the way from France, and you have just the most interesting story. I was just captivated while I was studying for this show. And you were born, in, I'm going to screw this up, Argentan? Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's in Normandy, yeah.
Okay. And tell us how you grew up and what the culture was like. Your father was actually a very successful jockey and trainer. And tell us about growing up in France.
Well, it's like it's kind of like different than here, you know, living in the state. But my father was a jockey, and he started training when I was very young. So, you know, I was kind of all on the racetrack, you know, since I was a little kid. But it's funny because when I was little, I was not. That's not really what I wanted to do, you know. I was more, you know, willing to do like all the other kids, you know, who was at school with me, you know, playing sport and all kind of stuff like this. And it's probably when, like, maybe like 11, 12, I really started to, like, being really interested. And so that's when my dad asked me if I wanted to join the jockey school in France. And I said, yeah. I said, just give it a try. And he said, try it, you know, if you don't like it, you can always go back to the regular school. And and I started and just loved it, and since then I never left.
Wow. So you never really rode very much until you applied at the school?
Yes, I rode a few times, but not like some other kids who's been riding since, like, they are like 3-4 years old, you know. I was there once in a while on the pony or something, but not really not training every single day, or I wasn't living at the farm or anything like this.
Right, but you were athletic, given that you played sports as a kid.
Yes, not exactly.
What sports did you play, Florent?
What sport? I was playing soccer a few, and I was boxing for a little while.
Boxing? That's impressive.
I can always use it sometimes.
Of course. And so did you look up to your father, though, growing up? Did you look up to him, and did you think that would be a cool thing to do?
Yes, like I told you, when I was a kid, I was more willing to do some other stuff, but no, probably later, and yeah, everybody because I'm very short, like him, so I always thought, yeah, you're going to be a jockey, and I was like, yeah, all right, And later on, that's what it became, it's funny.
Did you see the difficulties that, of course, he had to overcome, as every jockey does, with the injuries and maybe just the tough life the life of a jockey is?
He gave me good advice, with all the risk, it could be and stuff, but when you start doing it, you think about the positive, not the negative, so that's the way I'm looking at right now, it's like, if you think you're gonna fall off or break some bones or something like that, it's not really fun, you need to be aware of it, but need to think about the positive, about winning big races and stuff like this.
A good attitude to have, Florent. So you were well aware of the dangers of the business when you applied to the school, and how did that work? You were only 13 when you started with the AFA-SEC Jockey School in France, is that correct?
Yes, we call it the AFASEC.
Okay.
Yes, it's a good program, for kids. It's half school and half work. And it's a very big jockey school, actually. There's almost like 200 kids every year there. And at the end of the program, they all have a job, They become either exercise rider, and some of the most fortunate became a jockey, but very few, maybe 2% of them become jockey, so it's very low. But no, there's always a good job at the end of it, and they have a great, they have like a certificate, of the school, and it's all good. They become graduate, and it's all good. It's a very good program.
Wow, 2% go on to actually ride races. That's an incredible statistic. So you were one of the fortunate few. What was the curriculum with that school? Did you start from the ground up? Did you start cleaning out stalls and things like that?
Yes, exactly. We have a little bit of a different program than it is here in the state. But when over there, even if you are like a regular exercise rider, you need to take care of the horses. We don't have any groom or hot walker like we do have here in the state. The exercise rider do the whole thing. Clean the stalls and groom the horse and feed the horse. So we do pretty much the whole thing. But instead of riding like 6, 7, 8 horses a day, we only ride like 3 or 4 in the morning. So it's completely different. Different method of working in the morning.
Wow. Right, exactly. And how long was the school?
It was 3 years. From 13 all the way to I was like 16. But some of them, they can stay all the way higher, to have like some kind of like a master's and stuff like this. It's more for people who want to work pretty later on in like the breeding program or stuff like this. But I wanted to get out quick and start riding races, so I took the shortcut.
Of course. And did the kids who graduated, say, after 3 years, were they ready? Were you polished by the time you graduated the school? Were you ready to ride?
Yes, no, I think they're ready to ride. And also before I started riding at 16, they have races while you're between 14 years old and 16 years old. They call that the race, AFASEC. It's only between kids who are the school. And the trainer are putting a horse, in the race. And there is no money. No one can bet on the race. It's just like it's a race, but it's not a real race. It's like on a big race course. And
wow.
So it's a good practice. So we do that when we are kids. And there are once a month a race like this, and they're still doing it. It's very famous. Like, you know, you wear the six and of the owner of the horse, the whole thing, but just no one get paid, you know. But we're more looking to raise than get paid anywhere at this age.
Do you remember one of those earlier races? Do you remember the feeling you got when you got a leg up on your first horse?
Yeah, no, sure, no. I remember the whole thing. I remember my first race ever and my first official race and the whole thing, you know, the horse names, the race course, the whole thing. So, no, it's something you never forget. And it's like when you start getting that feeling, you know, you just want to keep riding more and more races.
That's incredible. Now, describe to myself and the listeners, because I know very little about French racing, and describe to our listeners, I know there are different directions you run and there's so many different racetracks out there. Describe French racing in a nutshell.
No, I think racing in France are pretty big, you know. We have a lot of different race courses, you know, pretty much every city, you know, there is in France, there is a racetrack, and some are smaller than bigger, but the biggest racetracks are around the capital, you know, in Paris. So I think there's like four or five in Paris, plus, you know, a few of them just around it. So that's where, you know, we race pretty much the whole time. It's like the bigger league, you know, biggest league, you know, kind of like Kinlan or Saratoga or sometimes it's a racetrack like this, you know. Then there's also a racetrack. There's a little bit less money, but the racetrack is still good, but there is no meet, you know, like we do up here in North America. It's everyone's training at the training center. There's a few of them, you know, all over in France. And from them, you just ship the horse and go to the racetrack.
Wow.
Racetrack is only to run, it's not to train, so.
Really? Really? Yeah. And do they do a lot of training over the turf? Obviously, there's a lot of turf.
You know what? Not really, you know, maybe once a week, you know, just kind of like we do here sometimes, but horses training in the dirt in the morning, I think it's better, you know, for the horses and, you know, like for their health, you know. They come back in better shape, you know, after training. And also horses have take a little bit more out of it, you know, just make them a little more tired and a little more fit.
Sure, sure. And in France, the turf is often soft out there, is that right?
Yes, it is. You know, it doesn't get very hot, you know, but yeah, once in a while, you know, the horse, the race is, you know, pretty firm. Like, you know, sometimes it gets firm too, you know, but like you said, you know, it's mostly, you know, on the good soft side than it is on the firm side, like here, you know, in the country.
Sure, sure. And when you're in a race in France, you don't have ponies that take you to the start, do you?
No, we don't have no ponies, no. There's no outrider or nothing, so you just pretty much on your own, you know, when the groom, you know, take the shank off, you know, you're on your own, so you just go all the way to the gate. But most of the horses over in Europe are a little more kind, because they are riding in the morning for a longer time, you know. One set is about like 45 minutes to an hour, and here it's only 10 minutes or 15 minutes max, so horses are a little more well behaved.
Right, big difference than over here for sure. And do you find that, because you did that in France, do you find that here in the United States that you'll often warm a horse up without the pony?
Yeah, once in a while, it depends. You know, some horses need a little more warmer than some others. You know, if I can, I stay with the pony. You know, some horses are very good with pony, and some of them, you know, just need a little more extra warm up, so I can just take them away from the pony. But it just depends. You know, like it's a very individual case. You know, which horse, you know, is different things, so I just try to figure them out very quickly, you know. And some of time, you know, trainers, you know, wants to warm them up, you know, with the pony, you know. Trainer like Tom Amos or Chris Richard, you know, like the extra warm up, so I know they like to do that, so I just try to do my best, you know.
And sometimes you've never sat on a horse before, and that's the time period where you get to know the horse.
Yeah, no, exactly, you know. Sometimes it takes you like less than 2 minutes to figure them out, or at least have a very good feel of it. And from there, you know, you just race, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it does not.
And that has to be difficult. You have just a few minutes to, as I said, get to know this horse. What do you find, how do you do that?
I don't know, just I don't know, just a feeling, you know. I think it's something you can describe, you know, until you ride races or you'll be on the horses before, you know. But no, it's I don't know. I don't think it's very hard, you know. It's just like when you ride horses and races, you know what I'm talking about, you know. But no, it doesn't get very difficult. You know, most of horses are pretty well behaved. You know, there's not like a horses, you know, like a wild Mustang or something like that. You know, most of them are very well behaved and pretty cool to ride.
So, Florent, you went to the school at 13, and you began riding races in France at the age of 17. And through the schooling process, was there ever a shadow of a doubt in your mind that you were doing the right thing?
Yes, no. When I was tired, you know, after like a year later, you know, maybe when I was like maybe 15, I started winning my first race, you know, like the, you know, just between the kids, you know, in AlphaSec, and I started running some races and just loved it, you know, and I knew that's what I wanted to do, and keep trying harder, and you know, sometimes you're going home the weekend to visit your parents, you know, especially when you're like 14 years old, and sometimes I just wanted to stay here the weekend and show, you know, show my boss that's what I wanted to do, and hopefully, you know, while I was working the weekend, give me a horse, you know, to ride in the afternoon. So I did a little bit of sacrifice, but I guess at the end it paid off, you know.
So it was when you actually started to ride races that you knew this is what you wanted to do. And jockey Florent Giroux joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Florent, you began riding in France, and you were actually the leading apprentice there in 2005.
Yeah, I got very lucky and fortunate. You know, I was working. My boss was a his name was Mathieu Boutin, and they are running a lot of horses, and especially in climbing races. And I was able to ride a lot and win a lot. You know, running for him, and he gave me a very good chance. You know, as an apprentice, you know, he gave me pretty much first goal, you know, in less than a year, and it's pretty good because in France usually apprentices, they ride only once in a while, the weekend, or sometimes just to have the weight off, you know, in some of the races. But he gave me pretty much, you know, he got confident in me, you know, confidence in me, and gave me pretty much the whole bounce ride, and I got lucky and just started winning a lot of races.
So in France, do you ride specifically for one trainer, or is it similar to the U.S. in where you ride for all multiple trainers?
Yes, it's a bit different, you know, just over there, you're more, like I said, you know, when you go to school, they put you, you know, with one trainer and kind of under contract, and you stay with them. And here you're freelance, you know, in North America, you just go over there and have an agent and just, you just knock door to door, you know, to different trainer, and to get some mount over there, you more just work for one trainer and until somebody else wants you and start asking you. But in the morning, you know, a lot of trainers, you know, even when you're apprentice, they still need to ask the permission of your boss if they can ride you on horses.
Wow, so there are no agents in France?
Yeah, they do now. Yeah, no, they do. But when you're apprentice, you know, even if you have an agent, they still need to ask your boss first, you know, because he's the one, and you have your bug, but it's only it's different than here. Here it's for 1 year, you know, from your fifth winner. Over there it's a 70 winner or 25 years old. So you don't have so you better use your winner, you know, in better races than some races, you know, somewhere in a weekend in a country with very low purse. You know, you need to win some races, you know, at the bigger stage. And
wow, so yes, that's very different from the United States, where an apprentice.
No,
right, that basically gets about a year with their apprenticeship, and that is definitely different than France. So you learned, Florent, you learned on those claiming horses, starting out, riding for that trainer specifically, and how is it different? Describe the difference between riding those cheaper horses and learning on those horses versus where you are now riding on these graded stakes winning horses.
Well, you know, race horse is race horse, you know, but what can I say, defense, yeah, cleaning horses are, you know, probably a lot slower than some of the great stakes horses.
Sure.
But I think it's good to start, you know, with some of the lower one. You know, you can you can practice a lot, and there is not as much as pressure, you know, and to ride, you know, some of the biggest races. So no, I would say it's the best way to start. You know, everyone's gonna tell you if you've got a chance, start, you know, with claiming races and just like you know, like make sure you know. You're doing the right thing during the race, and when you're ready, you ride some better quality horses.
Sure. And you rode in France for about 3 years.
Yeah.
And you rode at over 50 racetracks, which is an astounding number. And you won about 150 races in France. So you did very well for yourself while you were in France. But you wanted to make a change, yes?
Yes. You know, I was not really planning on it. You know, actually, it's not like I'm saying, oh, I'm leaving, you know, I don't like it. Over there, you know, during the winter, a lot of trainers decide to give some time off to the horses. You just send them to the farm just to refresh them and stuff like this. So it's kind of like the off-season there. So I decided, you know what, during the off-season, why not try, you know, something different. You know, I always like, you know, the horses here in North America, especially in the U.S., so I'm like, yeah, let's try it, you know, one winter. I'm not planning to ride, you know, just like discover something new, you know. So I just contacted, you know, Patrick Biancon, and I went to work with him at in California, Santa Anita. And I decided, you know, like after a few months, I was starting to breed pretty much all the horses for him. And, you know, he thought I probably needed more time, you know, to get polished and to ride races. And he said, he was willing to give me a chance, you know, to ride for him if I decide to stay here. And he said, I think my style can add up well here, and my weight is very good because I'm pretty light, and I will have no problem making the weight here. And he said, he thought I could make it here, and that's what he told me. And he kind of like asked me if I wanted to stay, and he said that was a good idea. So I was kind of like thinking back and forth, because I was doing good in France, and coming here, you know, with the unknown, you don't know if you're going to be successful or not. So I just decided to go ahead and start doing all my paperwork and for my visa and stuff, and decided to stay here.
Were you very familiar with racing in the United States before you actually shipped over here? Would you watch the races over here frequently?
Yes, no, not really. No, I was watching, you know, big events, you know, like Breeders' Cup races or the Kentucky Derby, you know, just big events, you know, but no, I wasn't watching, you know, a lot of races and the internet and all the stuff we have now. That was not as much accessible, you know. It was, you know, like 7 or 8 years ago. Now it's very easy to pull up a race and watch replays and stuff, but, you know, a few years back, that was not as much as easier. So no, I wasn't really watching races, only like big events, you know, like Breeders' Cup and stuff like this. And, you know, it's like everything. It's like, you know, if you watch the art, you know, on TV, or, you know, the Royal Ascot Meet, it makes you want to go, you know. It's like a lot of people and big races, and big name jockeys, big name trainer. It makes you want to go. So, boy, that's why I was, I decided to give it a try.
So it had to be a little bit of a culture shock for you to move from France and then to work at Santa Anita. It had to be a big difference.
No, it was, you know, but on a good way, though. But no, and I just loved it, you know, since I first put my feet, you know, on the ground here in the country. So, you know, everyone is different. You know, you like it or you do not, you know. If you don't like it, you just take the plane back and go back home. But I decided to stay and just loved it. So since then, you know, I knew what I had to do, you know, work hard and hopefully getting lucky. So it's what I did.
Definitely worked hard. And Patrick Biancon, what was the best thing he taught you?
Well, especially like working, you know, with the time, you know, because that's, over there we walk the horse by the feeling, you know. We don't walk by time, you know, like, oh, you need to go half a mile in 48 and change, or So no, it took me a while, and at first, you know, it was working with the walkie-talkie. So that was good, you know, to give me really like the pace and a lot of 2 minute click, you know, during the week, and really I think give me a very good sense of the pace. So now, you know, I can ride my races, and if the pace is going too slow, you know, in front of me, I'm gonna move a little bit sooner, or if there is too much pace, I won't panic and keep my horse, you know, a little bit farther behind and wait to make my move. The sense of the pace is very important, and I think some of the jockeys, you know, especially who start off, you know, never get a chance, you know, like me, to have someone who taught them and probably give them a lot of time, you know, in the morning to practice it, you know. Some of them, they go straight to races, and sometimes take them a little bit longer, you know, to get adjusted to it.
It's a very difficult thing to learn, and Florin, anyone who watches you ride can obviously tell you have an excellent clock in your head. But to our listeners, I mentioned this on the show before, the riders have to know exactly to the second how fast you're going, especially when a trainer asks you to work a horse in a specific desired time, and that's a very difficult thing to learn.
Yes, no, it is. No, it takes some time too. You know, it's not you're gonna be at your first try and be, you know, right, you know, exactly at the second. You know, but takes a lot of time. You know, and it's a lot of work. And you know, when you do something wrong, you need to be aware of it. You know, not think you're doing good, and when you're not. You know, so that's why, you know, you always keep your head in your shoulder and make sure you move forward. You know, and you're learning from your mistakes.
We'll continue our visit with jockey Florent Giroux after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Hello, this is Kayla Strah, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to Charlestown, where Arnaldo Bocachica had a great week highlighted with wins on Saturday in the West Virginia Breeders' Classic Distaff, the West Virginia Division of Tourism Breeders' Classic, and the West Virginia Lottery Breeders' Classic. Bocachica had a solid week by winning 33% and coming in the money on 61% of his mounts. For the week, Bocachica finished with 6 wins, 1 second, and 4 third place finishes. Luis Contreras had a solid week as he took the Bunty Lawless Stakes at Woodbine aboard Seen It All Before. Contreras won 27% and finished in the money on 45% of his mounts. For the week, Contreras finished with 9 wins, 5 seconds, and 1 third place finish. Tyler Gaffleon had a strong start to the Gulfstream Park West meet by winning 29% and coming in the money on 53% of his mounts. For the week, Gaffleon finished with 10 wins, 3 seconds, and 5 third place finishes. Finally, Jose Ortiz impressively led North America in wins with 14 and was able to close the gap on Irad Ortiz for leading rider at Belmont Park. For the week, Ortiz won 30% and consistently finished in the money on 66% of his mounts. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all of the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com or follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They are coming to the top of the lane, and Fast Anna has the lead. Fast Anna, work all week. Fast Anna, work all week. The two private zone behind that. Secret Circle trying to battle on from third. Then comes Bakken and Palace behind that. They're at the top of the lane, and Work All Week takes the lead. Work All Week now goes for home. Private Zone coming with a run. Salutos Amigos late. Secrets of Circle coming late as well. And on the inside, Fast Anna tries to battle back. It's suddenly wide open, but Work All Week's holding on. Work All Week, Secret Circle. Work All Week has won it. Work All Week to Secret Circle. Private Zone and a flying Bourbon Courage in a photo for third.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigal, I am joined tonight by jockey Florent Giroux. And you just heard the replay of Florent's win last year in the Breeders' Cup Sprint with Work All Week. And that was his first return to California. Right now we're talking about his initial stay at Santa Anita. And Florent, we were talking about when he worked for Patrick Bianconi before we went to the break. And at some point, Patrick decided to ride you on a few of his horses in the afternoon, yes?
Yes, no, I did. You know, while I was working for him, you know, over in Kentucky and in New York, you know, at Saratoga, and while I was starting, and, you know, he told me you want some horses, and right after that, you know, I had to go back to France to get my visa and stuff, and while I come back here in end of September, I started running, you know, right off the bat. I rode the Hot on Bell Cup for Mike Maker. And then I think I finished fourth, you know, that year. That was a long time ago. Then I started running at Kinlan opening weekend. And I had a lot of mounts, you know, lined up, which was pretty cool, you know, for me just trying to being here. And unfortunately, I didn't get lucky because I kept hailing, you know, with somebody just in front of me, you know, a horse kind of like crossed over me and my horse kept hailing. And I went down and broke my back and my arm, so I was out, you know, for a few months. And while I was injured, Patrick Bianco, actually him himself, you know, get suspended, you know, for a year. So when I come back the next following year, I had to start again, you know. So I was really thinking myself, you know, what should I do now? Should I just stay here or should I just leave, you know? But it took me a very long time to get my paper done and kind of expensive too, you know, so I just decided to try hard here and stay here. And I had a friend of mine who actually was a assistant trainer at the time for Patrick Biancon, and at the time, after a while, he was working for Mr. Bill Mott, and he decided to go to Mr. Mott, sent him to Arlington Park, and my friend Rudolph Brisset said, if you want, you know, I'm going to Arlington Park for the first time, and you know, my boss is saying he, you know, is like a string of like 20 horses, and I think, you know, we can give you a chance, you know, to get started there and probably push you on some of the other horses. And I just decided to follow him and give it a try, and so it's why I land, you know, at Arlington Park, you know, at first, and I started running a few, you know, for Mr. Mott, and one of the first one who gave me the opportunity to ride. And yeah, it took me a little while to get from there because I don't have any apprentice. You know, I don't have any bug and the weight off, and no one knew me. And my English at the time was not very well. You know, I don't know if it still is. You know, but at the time it was worth. And just from there, just take me some time. You know, I just decided to stay in Chicago for a few years. And like a few years later, I meet my agent, Doug Breda. And from there, you know, we went on like getting on some better horses and better mount and get a little more wins.
Your luck was starting to change, Florent. But that's a major setback to deal with. All those things all at once, the visa, the injuries. And was there ever a point in which you wanted to give up?
No, yes, no, not really. No, when you do that, you know, you know the consequences, you know, of the job, you know. But yeah, sometimes you get down and thinking to yourself, you know, what should I do? But in the bottom of your heart, you know what you want to do. You know, we know what your passion are, and that's part of the job, you know. And I think it's like, I don't wish, you know, no one to get hurt, but sometimes, most of the time, you come back stronger and. You know, you even work harder, and that's what I did, and worked out good for me. So,
Florent, I completely understand what you're talking about. My brief career riding was set back with injuries, of course, and when I would come back, I would always be that much more determined. And actually, one story: when I was hurt at my parents' house recovering, I was watching the races on TVG, and horses I was previously riding were winning, and I was so upset. I was throwing things at the TV. I wanted to be out there. So I'm sure you can relate to that.
Yeah, it's not exactly. You know, everyone, you know, who's reading before or still running knows what I'm talking about. You know, use of people, they might not exactly, you know, but no, it's a good thing. You know, it's you don't, like I said, you know, you don't wish no people to getting hurt, you know, in this business, you know, but when you come back stronger. So good.
And come back stronger, you did. But Florent, I want to ask you about an interesting fact I found. You had a brief gig in Ireland before you returned back to the States. Is that right?
Yes, I did. You know, actually, before I came to the States, while I was waiting for my paperwork, you know, for my visa, Patrick Bianco at the time was working a lot, you know, with Coldmore, John Magner, Mike Table, and Derek Smith, and they play one of the biggest honor, you know, we have here, you know, in the world, and even here in North America, they're pretty big too. And he said at the time I was working he was working for them, and just decided to send me there just for a few months just to learn, you know, and practice my English and also working for them. So while when I was coming back here, you know, in the States, it would be easier, you know, for them, you know, for him to put me on the horses if they knew already who I was, you know. And that was great. That was a great experience. And I rode, you know, a lot of races there and different racetracks also in Ireland, which was pretty cool. And made some new friends and a good experience. And I'm glad I went there.
And then you arrived back in the States and you mentioned something interesting. You said practice your English. So when you initially moved to the United States as Santa Anita, did you not speak very good English?
No, not really. I knew it was like the basic world, you know, but I couldn't really have a conversation with anyone.
Really?
But the trainer was French and the other exercise rider were French, so we didn't really need to speak English, you know, to walk there, you know. But that's why, you know, when we all went apart, you know, a little bit later on, I had no choice and I had to speak English. So, no, that was good, you know, but everyone who stays here and you put effort into it, you know, you're going to be able to speak it a different language, you know, especially when you are surrounded, you know, with people who speak in English. So you have to learn, or you need to communicate and feed yourself. So there's no choice.
So you had to learn.
Exactly.
And you mentioned your agent, Doug Brader, who I've spoken with and who's done a fantastic job with you. And Patrick Biancone actually introduced you to, yes?
Yes, correct. And that was funny. That was just, you know, sometimes you don't know how the thing goes in life, you know, but at the time I was working for Patrick during the off season at in Chicago, during, you know, January, February, since we don't race, you know, at Hawthorne, and while I was down, you know, in at Gulfstream Park, you know, working for him in the morning and riding for him maybe in the afternoon, and he bumped, you know, into Doug, you know, in the elevator, you know, and start talking to Doug and asking what he was doing and stuff. And at the time, you know, Doug just finished working a job, you know, at Hialeah, the quarter horse meet. And he asked him, Doug asked Patrick, you know, if he knew anybody he would represent, you know, as an agent. You know, Doug decided to turn the page, you know, of being, you know, working in the office and start wanting to work, you know, as a jockey agent. And that's funny because Patrick thought about me and thought, you know, we'd be a good combo, you know, with him working for me, since Doug knew a lot of people, you know, while he was working in the office. And he said, yeah, I know a kid, you know, and the next morning, you know, he said, you can meet him and come to my barn. And, well, I met Doug, and right away, you know, Doug is very sharp and very hard worker, and that I met him, you know, since that day, you know, he loves horse racing too, you know, and like I do. And since then we start working together, and that was not very easy, you know, at first, you know, but well, we was, you know, I think we went like 1 for 50 something at Gulfstream Park, but Gulfstream, it's always very hard, you know, to win races for anybody. So when we decided to go back to Chicago, you know, the two of us, it was a lot easier for us to win races there too, you know. So from there we just start moving on faster and faster and get better horses and winning better races. So it was all good.
Well, you two obviously make an excellent team. And you mentioned riding at Gulfstream and going 1 for 57, which is very tough and just shows your determination to stick through that and find such the success that you have. But another interesting statistic I found was that lone winner you had at Gulfstream was actually your first graded stakes win, is that right?
Yes, no, it's crazy, you know. And at the time, I think the field was running for like 25,000, no winner of two or something, and that was my lone win. And the field got claimed, you know, actually, you know, after I rode her, and from there she stayed for a little bit in South Florida. And the owner who claimed her was actually from Chicago, and they decided to, you know, just send the field to Chicago because, you know, she didn't acclimate very well, you know, to the weather there in South Florida. She wasn't very big, and she was losing a lot of weight and stuff like this. And I think I rode her, you know, my first time here in Chicago for 17.5, you know, 17,500, like a new winner of three or something like that. And she just galloped. And from there, you know, they put her in a little bit races, out-of-home races, and she ended up winning the Grade 3 de Poco up, you know, very easily. And finished fourth later on in the Queen Elizabeth at Keynote. So it was a very good story, you know, from a filly who just started kind of like me, you know, claiming races and very low, and we went all the way up, and we were able to compete in Grade 1 races, which was pretty cool.
That's a great story, Florent. And what was that like when you crossed the wire on Dade Babe? Was her name, and what was that like? Was that had to be such a satisfying feeling to get your first graded stakes win after all that you've been through?
No, that was good. No, I think that was also good also for the connection, you know, because at the time she was in a small stable, you know, for the trainer Danny Miller, who passed away, you know, a few years ago, and was a very, very good horseman and knew what he was doing, but just needed the right horse, you know. And it shows people, you know, he could have done it too, you know, when he was training better quality of horses. And, you know, he started that three from scratch. And from there, he win a big race, you know, with that filly, which was pretty cool also for the team. So that was nice. You know, I think that was nice for everybody, and especially me, you know, to win my first grade stakes, you know, here. And that was good. That was a good start.
Well, the graded stakes wins began to pile up. While in Chicago, you obviously started to do really, really well, and you began riding for trainers such as Wayne Catalano and owners such as Midwest Thoroughbreds. And with those said connections, you found a couple nice mounts, I would say, including Work All Week. Tell us about how you came into that barn.
Yeah, you know, it was like a kind of like a learning process, you know, because at the time I was, you know, I started running a hot on, you know, for trainer like Doug Matthews and people like this, you know, friends of mine. And later on, you know, we start moving on some bigger barn, you know, like Wayne Catalano, still ride me and very good friend of me. And, you know, he's always been me and kind of like teach me tricks too, you know, because he used to be a jockey, you know, always like keep me like, he always like to have somebody under his wing, you know, and he taught me a lot, you know, which was pretty good because, you know, at the time Wayne was like number one trainer in Chicago ever, you know, he's been like, they dominate, you know, the Arlington Park, you know, meet, you know, for many years and also win a few Breeders' Cup races, you know. So, you know, it was an honor for me to kind of be his protege, you know. And from there, you know, we caught, you know, the eye, you know, of big owners, you know, Midwest Thoroughbred, and started, you know, running for him, and especially that 2011 meet at Houghton during the fall, and we won a lot of races for him and a lot of, like, few stakes, you know, lot of Illinois bred stakes at the time because he was breeding quite a few in Illinois. And, no, we started doing very good, and from there, you know, I started running Walker Week. It was not the Walker Week of he was now, you know, but, like, he was still winning some good races at the time, some little stakes, and from there, you know, we went pretty good and went all the way to the top with him, which was pretty cool.
You said he wasn't the work all week we know today, but how did that transformation happen? How did you feel that horse grow and learn and develop? And tell us about that.
Well, I think first, you know, he always had the quality, that's for sure, you know, but the trainer, you know, Roger Brueggemann and the owner did well very with him because they never, like, put him, you know, where he could not win, you know, so he started winning some Arrowhounds races and he won quite a few like this, you know, starting, you know, with the state bred Arrowhounds, and he went on to the open Arrowhounds, you know, which was like he didn't need to run against Illinois bred, like with like every bred, you know, he can run. And also he started running some like stakes bred, you know, stakes bred only for Illinois bred. Then he started winning some like open stakes, and from there he started various stakes races and Breeders' Cup. So they did well with him, you know, they managed him very well and they took their time and they got rewarded for it, you know. So they really, like, when the horse came into the bigger stage, the horse was polished and knew how to win.
That has to be a satisfying feeling, Florent, to teach a horse along the way and know that where he is today is because of the way you would ride him and teach him. And what was he like to ride?
Well, it's very easy to ride, you know. First, he's super fast, so there's not much to do with him, you know. Just, like, leave the gate in good order, just sit on him, and he pretty much do the rest, you know. He's a very, very nice horse to ride, and I think he can make everybody look good, you know. And, you know, I was very lucky and fortunate to ride him, you know, and especially got the chance to ride him last year during the Breeders' Cup. So, no, I think those horses, they know what you're doing. You don't need to do anything special with them, you know. Just, like, stay out of their way, and they do the rest pretty much.
When you heard that you were going to the Breeders' Cup with Work All Week, what was that like? What was that feeling like, knowing that you were going to be going back to Santa Anita, where you kind of got your start in the United States, and what was that feeling like?
Well, that was great, you know. It's always a place, you know, you're looking forward to go, you know. Santa Anita is a very nice racetrack and very good history, you know, behind the track too. But no, that was cool. It's like it's funny how things go, you know, in life, you know, and it's where I first started, and when I came here and I win my biggest race, you know, so find my career over there. So that was pretty cool. That was nice. And no, and when I was running the race, no one. Really kind of thought, you know, why they're sending that guy here or thing like this, you know. People, you know, like the connection had confidence in me, you know, because I was wearing the horse and I was doing good with him at the time. And why fix it, you know, if it's not break it, you know. So they just keep the same rider, same connection, and I'm glad they did because it worked out good.
It is pretty incredible, Florent. That work all week was your first mount in the Breeders' Cup. And what was that like, given that you would always watch the Breeders' Cup in France? I'm assuming in France that's a little bit bigger deal than, say, the Derby. Breeders' Cup is so big internationally. So what was that like to have watched that race for so many years as a kid and then to win it?
No, that was cool. You know, it's always a race, you know, kind of races, you know, you're hoping and dreaming of riding. So to be able to win it, you know, as my first try was pretty cool, you know. And I was very excited. And actually, you know, that that same day, you know, early in the day, I was able, you know, to stay, you know, with the French television. They have like a little stand over there, and I went over there and, you know, talk with like few guys, you know, I knew from France, and some of the guys, you know, who used to ride with me and who's now retired and working for the French television there. And I was talking to them, and, you know, they kind of like, they were proud of me, you know, at the time, just before the race, you know, like I went and now I'm running, you know, Breeders' Cup races and stuff. And I know I didn't see them, you know, after the race, but I'm sure they were pretty happy for me and they were hoping for me to win the race. And that was pretty cool.
Florent, when they went that half in the blistering 43-1, you were just sitting just off the pace header. At what point in that race did you know you had it?
Well, when you left the gate, you know, in good order, and I was clear and had a good post, you know, at the time, because no one could have pressured me from the outside. So I was, you know, I was just sitting on the perfect position right away, you know, and like before coming to the turn, I was just like only one horse in front of me, you know, I was able to save ground and be in good position, and my horse was traveling very comfortable, you know. So from there, I thought I was in good spot, you know, and sometimes you ask them, you know, to go, you know, down the lane, and some of them do move forward and some of them just stay, you know, some of them, you know, just get tired. But no, I stayed for my horse and everything worked out very well, you know, from the race. And sometimes you need to get lucky too, and my horse, when I asked him turning for home, he did the race and just was very brave.
Jockey Florent Giroux joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Florent, you go home. You have a Breeders' Cup win now on your resume. Did you see an immediate pickup in business?
No. Immediately, there was nothing. You know, people were happy. And, yeah, of course, you know, that was kind of like the buzz. And, you know, it's like, oh, you win a Breeders' Cup stuff. And now it's like, you're going to get started. And right after that, we went to the fairground, you know, together with my agent. And he took quite a while, you know, because opening weekend over there, we are running some like 5,000, 7 races within our bread, you know. So we went, all right, now we need to show them, you know, what we can do, you know, and show people it's not because you win a Breeders' Cup race, you only want to ride good horses, you know. So we had pretty much to start over again and start working hard, but that was not immediately, you know. And later on, when we start winning quite some other stakes, it's when people notice, oh, maybe the kid can be okay, you know, at bigger stage, you know, and like don't panic or anything, you know, and maybe we can give him a chance, you know. But no, the Breeders' Cup was very good, you know, but it takes time, you know. People want to see more than only one race, let's put it this way.
Lauren, I'm curious, when watching you ride, with such confidence, even with those long shots. Just what comes to mind is the very recent Grade 1 QE2 aboard Her Eminency. She paid $40 that day. You get on a horse, and you have that confidence just oozing from you. Where does that come from?
No, I don't know. A lot of jockeys, lots of jockeys has too, you know. When you're in a race, you have a chance to win it. You know, if you're not in it, you can't win it. So as long as you have a horse in a race, you have a chance to win it. And the horses, like I said, they can't read the tote board or anything, so we don't know they are like 100 to 1 or if they are 9 to 5. So we just ride them, you know, like, you know, it's not because you're 20 to 1 you need to ride them bad, you know, just give them a chance at least to compete in a race, and sometime, you know, you have a surprise. So that's why I just always try to give my horses a chance, even if they are long shots, you know, put them in the race and give them every opportunity, you know, to win the race.
You got to be in it to win it, he says. Florent, we only have a couple minutes left. This time has flown by. But a horse that was in it to win it was the Pizza Man at the Arlington Million this year. Tell us about that experience.
Pizza Man was great. You know, very similar story to Walker Week, you know, because I rode him at his first start when he was 2 years old and went on with him and started winning some, like, state bred stakes and first grade stakes and the St. Ledger last year. And this year, you know, Stars and Stripe and the Arlington Million. So Arlington Million was different feeling than the Breeders' Cup. You know, Breeders' Cup was great because it's more international races, more people, you know, watch those races, you know, everywhere in the world. But Arlington Million was more the connection race. You know, the owner from Chicago, the trainer is training in Chicago. That's my home track. That's the biggest race we have here, you know, in Illinois. So winning this one here is like almost winning a Super Bowl, you know, at home. So it was great. It was a different winning, but was all good. And he was also qualified right now, you know, for the Breeders' Cup Turf. So, and now I'm very excited about the horse. It's true and very good. I'm excited.
Winning on his home track was an awesome experience, I'm sure, Florent. With just 2 minutes left, tell us about what you have coming up in the Breeders' Cup and what do you think of your chances?
Oh, I think I have pretty good chances, you know, this year, and hopefully I can win some. You know, Pizza Man, of course, you know, in the Breeders' Cup Turf. I also have a very nice filly, a 3-year-old filly for Mr. Larry Jones, Amechado Box, who just won recently the Cotillion at Parks. She's running in the Breeders' Cup Distaff on Friday. If she's doing good, and looks like everything is so far, you know, set up good for her. I have a 2-year-old filly for Mark Cassie, who just won recently the Win and You Win Natalma at Woodbine. It was very impressive. And I have another horse I just picked up very recently at Kinland, the Mongolian Saturday, who's going to run in a turf sprint. And hopefully, some more I don't know yet I'm going to ride. So far, I have, looks like I'm having 4 races and hopefully more to come. You know, hopefully some trainer decide to give me a chance, you know, last minute.
Florent, we will be wishing you all the best. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
If you missed any portion of tonight's show, don't forget you can listen on our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dalla Pina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.